This is the Steve Cochran Show.
WGN Radio is the sound of Chicago.
720 WGN.
Here's what you're not getting anywhere else this morning. You're not getting Don Rickles' daughter, Vanna White, Newt Gingrich, Calista Gingrich, and Pat Brady all on the same show. 6:11, good morning. Well, we didn't expect that. If you wake up this morning, you see the final last night from the UC was 5-2. It wasn't that big a blowout. But the Hawks got jobbed on a couple of really ugly, stupid calls. And then lost their minds and did a couple stupid things after that. Ended up playing back-to-back 5-on-3s, gave up 2 power play goals in a row, go from a 2-1 lead to a 3-2 deficit, couple of empty netters at the end of the game, and it's 5-2. I would like to thank the thousands and thousands of people coming in from the Western Burbs who made sure that it took me 2 hours and 15 minutes to get to the United Center last night in a drizzle.
What was going on yesterday? It took me like 2 hours to get home.
Ridiculous.
And why? I don't understand it. It was a little bit of rain.
I don't understand it either. Either people no longer know how to drive or there are more people on the road at a time where statistically the population in Chicago and Illinois is dropping. I don't understand it either.
No, it's just the rain. It always happens.
It took me.
But it doesn't always happen. It's gotten worse.
It has.
Because exponentially, if you take this, if 2 hours equates to drizzle, what's it going to be like when there's 6 inches of snow?
It's always horrible. It took me 15 minutes to get home yesterday. I mean, it's insane.
Wow.
But that's how bad things have become.
Did you take supplies?
I brought a granola bar. And
really,
a bottle
15
of water.
Whole minutes?
Yes.
Wow.
Yes.
That's crazy.
I know. Thank
Plus,
you.
Plus, there's a lot of construction out there still. And there's going to be all winter, so got to get used to it.
Oh, we don't have to like it, though.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well. At 6:13, but thanks to the Blackhawks for another fine opening night, and it's just one. So 81-1's fine. I'll give you a prediction. Here's my prediction for the Blackhawks season. 57 wins. Mm-hmm. Write this down, Dave.
Okay.
57 wins. 15 losses. Doing the math in my head. And 10 OTLs.
Boy, that's a lot of OTLs.
Nah, really? Less than a third of the games.
Yeah, I know, but you want to win more of those.
Well, you will win more. In my head, they're going to play 20 to 25 overtime games.
Oh, okay, so you're over.
Yeah, they're over 500.
Okay.
57, what did I say? 15 and 10.
Yeah.
All right, that's what I'm going with. Okay. The first 2 Blackhawk goals were scored last night by the unknown comic and some guy named Phil. you know, it was the first goal of the season was Panic.
Panic.
Yeah. No, I'm Panic's a better name.
See, that he spells his name the same way that guy for the Giants, Joe Panic,
yeah,
who played against the Cubs the night before. But I checked. They're not related.
Panic and Panic?
Panic and Panic are not related.
Oh, did not know that. But that may be the only goal he scores all season, because that's not normally his thing, right?
No, it hasn't been, but he's playing on the top line.
And then this rookie that all the ladies love.
Ryan Hartman.
Yeah. Not only scored a goal, got in a fight.
Mm-hmm.
Had his helmet popped
off. Would you
remember
his debut? Like he jumped onto the ice and just clocked a guy?
Yeah. And women all over went, "Don't hit him in the face!"
Isn't he, what, 21?
They're all like 20 and 21.
6 rookies on this roster.
Yeah, and he's from West Dundee.
Dreamy.
A local guy.
So. Yeah, look, they were up 2-1, and they lost 5-2. So what is it? It's a Blues, it's a loss, it's what it is. So they got Nashville twice now,
mm-hmm,
home and away. Matter of fact, homecoming, I believe it's this weekend, so get your dress. And it's an early homecoming date this year. But the Hawks are going to be fine. They're going to be the number one problem for everybody else in the NHL. So just a rough start, that's all. At 6:15, just to keep it in sports for a second, the Nationals and the Dodgers play at what time today?
7 o'clock.
All right, so that'll determine who the Cubs play on the weekend.
Yes.
And young man that plays first base for the Chicago Cubs, I don't know if you're familiar with his work.
Anthony Rizzo.
He was there.
Was at the game last night.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that was quite
So who do we want?
Who else was there last night? Another Cubs great, Simone Biles.
Oh, yeah, she's great.
Simone Biles shot the puck between periods. Didn't go well for her, but she shoved the puck.
And then she did
a floor exercise across the ice, did 19 flips, and ended up in the center of the net.
And the crowd went crazy.
Yeah.
Do we want to play the Nationals or the Dodgers?
I think you want the Nationals.
Okay.
I mean, the Dodgers. Because
the dusty factor?
That's fun. The Nationals are a better hitting club. The Dodgers could be a better pitching club, but the Nationals have a great pitching team. Look, they're both good teams.
Yeah, they are.
Yeah. No, you know who you want? I'll be honest with you. Here's who you want. You want the Atlanta Braves. You'd like to play the Atlanta Braves.
No, I don't think it's an option, though.
What did the Braves win? 40 games this year? Wasn't good.
But they were better the second half.
Oh, they were.
Yeah. Okay. So I don't think you want them.
Wang Ding Doodle picks coming up. Sandberg, did you talk to my mother? Because I left her a message and she never called back. By the way, not unusual.
She didn't
call
Sandberg back either, so.
Okay. All right, so I don't know what the deal is. Mom's shutting us out, but we always give Mom a little extra time to get her picks in because, you know, she's connected to the mafia.
The Steve Cochran Show.
I used to be able to throw a pigskin a quarter mile.
The Wang Dang Doodle.
Are you serious?
Yep, it's happening again.
6:21, live from Wang Dang Doodle headquarters. Let's remind people, Sandberg, what the scoring is. I believe the Do Care team over the Don't Care team has won 3 of the 5 weeks.
Correct.
So we're 3-2. You guys are 2-3.
Correct.
Captain Mary Vandeveld, what's wrong with your team? You're 2-3.
She won last week. Yeah, and we're I won the whole thing.
Well,
can
maybe,
we pick first?
Maybe more practices or something because your team's not getting it done.
I know.
I like how we're one game ahead and I'm suddenly getting cocky.
Well, let me tell you, my back's hurting from carrying this team, okay?
That's right. Dang it. First thing she said this morning was, oh, God, we got to do the picks. I said, Bennett, help me out. Print out the games. I don't even know who's playing.
Could you have Bennett do
was
something?
Was that Mike or Mary?
I know.
Yeah.
Could you have Bennett do something important for the show today and maybe give us a season individual total tab? So we can figure out who's really killing it individually.
Yeah. Oh, sure. Yeah. Sure.
Oh, that's a good idea.
Yeah. Well, he's never going to have time for that. He's in the newsroom. He's supposed to be helping out me and Steve.
Yeah, really?
All right. So let's go to the picks. And we know my mother's not available until later this morning. I don't know. But she probably is. I'll be honest with you. Maybe she's got a hit on somebody. I mean, you know, I thought she was just running numbers. But with her connections to the mob, anything's possible.
Why is she dodging your calls? Consistently.
Maybe she
probably
likes
to keep me safe.
Ah.
Yes.
There you go. That's,
she probably
that's
just wants to sleep.
All right. So let's go to whom first?
Well, we're going to skip Ann and go to Andrea.
All Andrea, right. Your pick.
Okay. My pick. I'm going Tom Brady.
Sure.
And
yeah, that's a surprise.
I'm going to pick can you hold the commentary? Can we do something about the Don't Care team's commentary?
I didn't hear anything. No, can you just hurry up and get the picks? We got things to do, you know?
And I'm going to pick that game,
the crash
Mary,
on the Eisenhower.
Pat.
Actually, that was Jake doing Mary producing the show.
Wait a minute. I'm confused. And I'm going to pick that game, the Patriots over the Bengals, 27-17.
All righty. And Dave Ennett.
Oh, very good. Thank you. Ben Roethlisberger, and I will take Arizona.
He's a Trump supporter.
You know, if I'm going to do anything in this, I have to put politics aside.
He's got to redeem himself.
I feel like if you pick Ben, you're supporting Donald Trump.
Okay, so Andrea took Tom Brady, who's a Trump supporter.
Not officially.
Not anymore.
I don't know about that.
All right, let's get the score.
I got to tell you something.
Yeah, you're the one who wants to speed this up.
I got to tell you something. After what he said last week and the five women that came out yesterday, I think Giselle's at the house going, you're supporting who?
Yeah, right.
All right, you're picking Roethlisberger.
Arizona 30, New York. Yes, I'm Roethlisberger at Arizona 30, New York Jets 21.
All right, next.
All right, Mike Jacobson.
Jake.
Hello. I'm going to go with Houston versus Indy, and the Texans 28-17 the score. And my quarterback, I was going to go with Trevor Siemian, but
yes.
It's not 100% that he's going to play.
No,
sources
man.
Say he's going he's to play.
I think he's going to play.
He's got a final.
Get me a quarterback. Get me a quarterback.
I think he's done.
Come on, Mikey. You got it, baby.
Matthew Stafford.
Yeah, good call.
Okay. Matthew Stafford.
Cochran.
He stinks.
Matt Ryan.
Uniforms on the Lions. Just awful.
Matt Ryan, Atlanta Falcons.
I love Honolulu Blue.
Atlanta, Seattle. And I'm going to go with a real barn burner coming out of Soldier Field where Jacksonville comes into town against the Chicago Bears. 2-1.
Wait a minute.
I don't think that's possible.
You're picking a winner, but you're picking a score from a different game?
No, I'm picking Bears 2, Jacksonville 1.
Oh, I thought you said you were taking Atlanta. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I'm picking Matt Ryan as quarterback. Well, you can pick any game score.
Yeah, no, I didn't know. I thought you were doing that.
What's your
real score?
So you're
taking the Bears?
That isn't my real score. My real score is Jacksonville 34.
Ooh.
Oh. The Bears 27.
Oh.
That would be a barn burner.
Yeah.
All right. Do we have time for the don't cares?
Yeah. Yeah, actually, we do.
Mary?
Wow, a first.
Yeah.
Ah,
well, let's not waste your time. The clock is running.
I can take my time. You guys always do.
Well, let's see how that works out for you. Feel free to go slow.
I mean, I won last week.
Yeah, really? All right, I'm going with Rodgers. That would be Aaron.
Rodgers Cromartie?
No.
Rodgers and Hammerstein?
Rodgers who?
Aaron.
Oh, Aaron Rodgers.
Aaron Goldberg Rodgers. Picking a Packer. Yes. Oh.
Typical don't care.
Yeah.
Okay, but I am going with the Cowboys over the Packers, which my husband's going to be really mad about. 28-20.
Yeah. All right, who's next?
I am. Mary, I'm going to take Dak Prescott.
You want to identify yourself?
Mary Sandberg, Boyle.
Boyle, Friesen, Glashen, Farfik, Nugent.
I'm going to take Dak Prescott.
Because you think he's a really good quarterback, or do you think he's cute?
That would be both.
Both, yeah.
When's Tony Romo effective?
That's
a good question.
He may not play when he comes back. I mean, there's
When's he okay to play?
Oh, I think
Halloweenish.
At least 8 weeks. So I think sometime in November.
All right, call your Dallas sources.
I think he should retire. I mean, you got three bad back injuries like that.
I don't know if he'll ever
take the money.
I think he's
and
a
run.
Great bench coach, though. He's good for morale. I like seeing him.
I think he may be a head coach someday.
I'm going to take the Steelers over the Dolphins.
You know that Ben Roethlisberger is a Trump supporter.
31-12.
Okay. Interesting. All right. Who's next?
Grizz Anich.
And he's not in the chair, so we'll have to get his picks later.
Oh, Bennett, Ryan's Bennett not is here in to sports. Help so.
I just had a terrible vision that Grizz Anich was with my mother.
Oh, God.
And who's next?
Bennett, and he's in sports.
Got it. Bennett.
Okay.
Bennett, by the way, got 2 points last week.
Yeah, come on, Bennett.
Two points. We didn't even think 2 points was possible, and he got 2 points last week.
Well, let me tell you, Steve.
Got sick.
I just proved you wrong.
Okay. As a matter of fact, he did. Who's your quarterback?
My quarterback will be...
I like how Grzanich didn't care so much he left.
Yeah.
He might be doing news.
Yeah.
Bennett, pick Jim
McMahon. I think we know that's unlikely.
Pick Jim McMahon.
I thought about it. I very strongly considered it, but I saw he probably wasn't going to be on any of the rosters.
Okay, come on. Let's get to pick.
So
we have everybody's out sick here in the newsroom.
Oh, there
so
he
we
is.
Have like one person.
Yeah,
here.
Okay. Listen, I don't need an excuse. I need a pick.
Okay, back to Grzanich. Who's your pick?
Skipping right over me.
Can you skip over me? Go with luck.
Oh, my God.
With luck. Who else?
Luck, and then pick a game.
Pick a game.
Points
with the
deducted
score.
Right here.
Well, I have not heard what
you... Do you want to go Giants-Ravens?
I do want to go Giants-Ravens. That's a great choice,
Mary,
and I'll
pick
the Giants there.
There you go.
And what's
how about
the score?
24-17.
Great call by you.
Thank you, Bennett. Right. It's a team effort.
QB, Tom Brady.
Okay. Yeah, he's already been taken. Picked. Yeah,
what?
Sorry.
That's not on my notes.
Is there any way we can make trades? I mean, this is
Bennett, could you take longer, possibly,
all
to
right,
do this?
Here we go. Andy Dalton of the Cincinnati Bengals.
Yeah.
I'm choosing said game, taking the Cincinnati Bengals over the Patriots 13-10.
Yeah, that game's already been picked.
That game's been picked as well.
Yeah.
How am I so bad at this?
This is why the don't cares don't get to pick on the year.
How about tonight's game? Isn't Broncos Chargers?
Yeah, Broncos Chargers.
Take that one, Chargers. Okay. I still like my QB pick. Let's go with the underdogs and pick the Chargers. Same score, 13-10.
All right, good call by you.
Thank
you.
And then John Mikas has Flacco. He's taking the 49ers over the Bills, and he's going 21-20.
All right. Listeners, please stop by any Jewel outlet to get your game card for the Wang Dang Doodle.
And your mom forfeited.
She did not. You guys forfeited because you weren't ready to pick.
What? I was ready. Yeah. We're all here, Zanich.
Don't pick out my mom.
Tony Romo, by the way, could come back after their bye week. Could be back early November, possibly October 30th, following their bye.
All right. Will you have him call me?
I will. I'll let you know. I'll keep you posted. Doesn't mean he'll play.
Right. No, he may not because
The kid's pretty good.
Dester Fowler.
Dak.
What?
Prescott.
Dak Prescott.
Yeah, Prescott.
Dak Prescott's really doing well.
I love our
reception
team.
Yet. Do you see, though, he's averaging like 6 yards a pass? I don't know. It's 6:30. We're back after this with the big story. Still to come, the latest from the Trump-Hillary debacle. We actually have real problems in this country. A naval ship being shot at Yemen. And is there a Cuban missile crisis in Syria? What? We'll get to that coming up. But the big story is next on 720 WGN.
This is the Steve Cochran Show.
For too long, Chicago was not honest with taxpayers and employees about the true cost of their pensions. We refuse to let the degradation of our politics downgrade Chicago's financial future. As a result, for the first time in a long time, all four Chicago pensions have dedicated and reliable revenue sources, and new city employees will share responsibility for funding their benefits.
It's complicated, to put it mildly. And it wouldn't be a complete restructuring of the pension system overnight just because we avoided a teacher strike. But now the budget is front and center and full focus. Pat Brady is here, and Bridget Gaynor, our friend Bridget, is on the phone from the Cook County Board.
Good morning.
Good morning, Bridget. How are you?
Good morning. Great. How are you?
Say hi to Pat so he doesn't feel left out.
Hi, Pat. How's it going?
Hey, Bridget. How you been?
Great. Great.
All right. So we got to talk budget in general. What's your take on what happened this week, though, overall?
For me or Pat?
For you.
Yeah.
So, I was pointing to you. You couldn't tell because you're on the phone.
Look, I think that it's a strong budget. The county's budget comes out today, and I think you'll see some similar attributes to it. We have dedicated piece for the pension. I think from the mayor's perspective, the pension is just what looms in everybody's mind, as if it's a time bomb that is going to undermine the finances of the city, no matter how much money you put into it. So the fact that he can say it's stable and that new employees are going to contribute more, I think, is a positive step. The devil's always in the details, and so we're going to get more of that, you know, as the budget gets released. But at some point, you've got to put an end and some kind of cap on the pension issue. I chair the county's pension committee, and I know it's just one of those things that people don't understand it. They just know it could really be harmful to our future.
Well, you look at the state number. Are we at $150 billion now underwater, Pat?
I mean, the number's so big, it almost looks like it doesn't even matter.
Is there any way, I mean, I think you particularly would understand exactly what you need to do, some of the things that need to be changed that bump up against a maybe constitutional prohibitions. Is there any stomach to actually make the changes that need to be made politically?
I don't think it's an issue of stomach, to be honest with you. I think the constitutional handcuffs make it really complicated even to do reasonable things. I mean, I spent about 2 years, we met with, you know, all the guys in labor halls and nurses at the hospital, and everybody understands that it's got to change to the degree that you're living longer. You want to say, look, the good news is you're not dead at 75. The bad news is this has to change to stretch out for your whole life. So it's not like you even get a smaller benefit. It just lasts longer. It's the healthcare piece that I think really needs to change, which is right now, both the county and the city, of all the benefits they give to their employees, about 60% is for their current healthcare and 40% is for retirement. But that's got to totally turn around, because in this whole country, really, you know, we spend too much money on healthcare, as much as that sounds crazy, but we spend way not enough on retirement, because we all are going to live a lot longer than we planned. And, you know, most people grew up in a house where their parents or their dad had a defined benefit pension plan, so you didn't really have to think about it. And now we're in a world where very few people have that, and it's going to require us to be a lot more thoughtful. The problem is it's just too easy to kick the can down the road. And that doesn't just mean for people with a pension. That's for everybody.
Yeah, and that's the bipartisan move. Doesn't matter who's in power. we'll let the next people deal with it.
I'd rather build a school than contribute to the pension. Or I'd rather do something that everybody can see and touch than do this thing that's not going to happen for 30 years.
Pat, talk about the effect of this on the state, and the idea that we talk about the state pension would make your head explode. But the county, the size of Cook County is immense. The size of the budget's huge. The state's problems are bigger than Cook County's, but Cook County's got issues. The city has issues. What's the state piece of this, Ben?
Well, I think, and Bridget, you, I'm sure, tuned into this, there needs to be a change to the Illinois Constitution. The Constitution was in 1970 that says you can't reduce benefits, and that's just not working. And listen, this is a bipartisan problem. The 3% cost of living increases, some of the actuarial estimates they make are unrealistic. There's some. Everybody knows what needs to be done. It's just a matter of getting it done.
Isn't the California answer the only answer? And that is, no matter what the fire is, you've got to go to a market-driven pension plan for new employees going forward and protect what the current employees have and cut it down as fast as you can.
Yeah, but I'm not sure, and even with you say the new employees are on a different system, but I'm not sure if that saves either the state or the county or the city pension funds. I don't know if that's accurate, Bridget.
Well, the new plan that they put together at the state, so in 2011, I think there's two things that are important to look at here. In 2011, they introduced a new plan for new employees, and it is much cheaper and much more sustainable for the state. It's a much lower benefit for the employees, and they contribute a lot more of it. And that is actually something that we could afford if everyone was on it. You can't change people who are already in the plan. But the other thing that I think is important to remember is, you know, I don't know, guys, if you remember in 2000, and I think it was six, that they went to a ballot to say, and we're going to have a big referendum and we're going to open up the Constitution for change. And you know who was totally opposed to it? Both the Chamber of Commerce and the business community and everyone on the labor side. And it's because the business guys didn't want to pay a progressive income tax and the labor guys didn't want to open up the pension. And now, you know, fast forward 10 years, we find ourselves in a world where neither one of those things has happened. And so I think, you know, both sides have to give a little bit. And so the question becomes, can you come up with a grand bargain that allows you to do, you know, something that everybody understands in a closed door room? Yeah, this has to be done. They just don't want to say it out loud.
Isn't that the year they skipped the pension payments?
They could have at the state. I mean,
2006, I think, and then the market crashed. And then,
but here's the thing. Both sides have pussyfooted around this issue forever. I know that's a poor choice of descriptives considering the week we've just had.
Donald.
But the fact of the matter is those days have to end. And is it going to take citizens in the street with burning clubs? Because the idea that the state, the county, and the city are all on fire and burning to the ground because of this pension problem, and everybody goes, boy, sure would be great if we could fix it. Well, we can fix it.
Yeah, the solutions are there. I mean, Bridget's laid them out. They're there.
Just, this is not curing an incurable disease. No.
The
problem.
How do you get the whole board on board?
As I said before, this is like you're in a set of legal handcuffs because it's really this Constitution issue. Having said that, to John's point, that's all changeable by humans. You know, this isn't something that we say, oh, if only those aliens would come from space and unlock the box that the Constitution's in. I mean, it's, you know, we have, seven different referendums on a variety of ballots in the next month. You know, all of this stuff is within our control. The question is, can you just find your way through the maze of everyone who needs to say yes?
And, I mean, Senator Cullerton's had something out for a while. It seemed like it would meet the constitutional requirements.
Well, the counties had, Tony Breckland and I worked on something for, like I said, a couple of years. The Civic Federation blessed it, and so did the labor unions, and it's a huge improvement, and we can't even get it passed through Springfield. So that's the other problem. So for places like the city and the county, we pay all the pension expenses, but we don't have the ability to change it ourselves. You still have to rely, and now it's caught up in, you know, the larger issues of the state. So it's definitely something that, you know, like to Pat's point, these are solvable problems. We just have to, problem is they're not necessarily solvable by the city or the county themselves.
I just don't know how you could take a look at the state and be $150 billion, it's probably more than that, in the hole and have it not be a 911 situation every hour of every day.
Right. That it's all you ever think about when you wake up.
By the way, the land bank is some good news. You want to talk about that for a second?
Yeah. So, you know, the land bank, we buy up vacant homes in communities all over the city and some of the suburbs. And, you know, our best thing is that we have found a way to connect to the small developers, guys that were kind of cut out of the system because it was so complicated and the court system was so complicated. So we're having an event this Saturday at 10 o'clock at a restaurant on the south side called Captain Hard Times. And it's for all the small developers. We did one on the west side 2 weeks ago. We had 100 different small developers show up. And we're looking to do 1,000 homes next year because we started 3 years ago, and and a good news government story. I mean, we are totally self-sufficient. We're going to make about $6 million this year that will fund all that gets plowed right back into buying new homes. So we are really excited about that. And for us, a lot of the people who are in the neighborhood want to help be a part of their own renovation. And so this allows them to do that. So we're really excited about that.
What do they do for information if people want to be involved?
Just go to BridgetGaynor.com, www.BridgetGaynor.com.
By the way, I'm going to be honest with you. Bridget may be on her way to a Stevie Award as favorite guest of the program.
Well, I mean, she's look at that. A female Irish reasonable. I mean, this is, we need more of this, don't you?
Yeah, yeah. Clear-eyed. Yeah. Yes, you know, Stacey St. Clair from the Tribune was last year's Stevie Award winner for best guest. I believe Bridget Gaynor is a front runner for that nomination. Nominations won't be out until January, Bridget. You could screw it up, but right now you're the leader in the clubhouse.
But I have something to work. I have something to work for.
Yeah.
Look at that.
So see? Thanks. Thanks for coming on.
Thanks.
A lot of politics next hour. That's actually Eric Edelstein on piano there, if you crank that up for a second. We played with Chicago for a while. At 6:58. Eric, do you remember those days? Were those good days?
25 or 624.
I don't know what you said.
I never know what it meant, but I loved the lyrics.
Good song. Good song, man. Good song. Here is your Hawks. Has this got a sponsor? Probably does, doesn't it?
I believe it does have a sponsor, sponsored by Four Seasons Heating, Air Conditioning, and Plumbing.
All right. And here is your entire Hawks Express.
And time expires, and the Blues beat the Blackhawks here 5-2.
That's plenty. Last night, 5-2. Blues over the Hawks. It was 3-2, a couple of empty netters at the end. Bad officiating. I don't like to pick on the officials if we win. But when we lose and they're clearly bad officiating, well, that's a bad combination. And it was an ugly end of the second period. So the Hawks lose the opener. They've got two with Nashville, one there, one here this weekend. Of course, you'll hear every minute of Blackhawks hockey here on your Blackhawks radio station, 720 WGN.
This is the Steve Cochran Show.
So, wouldn't you think that Paul Ryan would call and say, good going, in front of just about the largest audience for a second night debate in the history of the country. So, you know, you'd think that they'd say, great going, Don. Let's go. Let's beat this crook. She's a crook. Let's beat her. We got to stop it. No, he doesn't do that. There's a whole deal going on there. So, I mean, you know, there's a whole deal going on. We're going to figure it out. I always figure things out. But there's a whole sinister deal going on.
I always figure things out.
There's a whole deal going on.
There's a whole deal going on, but I always figure things out.
Who's his speechwriter?
I love the idea that Paul Ryan, after the last week, would call little Donnie J and go, nice work, pal. It's really working out well. It's Eric Edelstein. It's Pat Brady. We talk politics in extended detail on Thursday mornings. Later on this hour, Newt Gingrich and Calista Gingrich will be on. First off, Eric, nice to see you.
Thanks for having me. Good to be back.
How was North Carolina?
It was wet in a lot of parts of the state. They're still dealing with the aftermath of the hurricane in the eastern part of the state. But it's ground zero for politics. You got the presidential battleground state, a Senate race, and a governor's race. It's kind of crazy.
There is something going on in the South, which is only explainable because Donald Trump is the candidate. And that is that North Carolina could go to Hillary Clinton, and Georgia,
yeah,
is now in play and could go to Hillary Clinton. Virginia would go to Hillary Clinton.
Virginia is almost over, isn't it?
Yeah. Pennsylvania looks like it's done. There was a joke on the internet the past couple of days about if men voted, how red the country would be, red states versus blue states. And that looks to be the only way he pulls out of this tailspin. So, Eric, anyway, where do you work?
I work at AL Media.
How about you, Pat?
Next Generation Strategies.
So, Pat Brady, at what point does Kellyanne Conway quit? Five more women came out yesterday and said, Donald Trump touched me and I didn't say it was okay.
You know, I don't know, but she has been a bright spot for his campaign. I think she's been a very effective spokesperson for him, and she'll probably hang on as long as she's getting paid. But you'd think with all these allegations that she would get out. But I think this election is over, and now we're just trying to protect our down ballot.
But I think every day it becomes more and more difficult for women who have to live with themselves and go forward to defend him.
Yeah, I don't know how you can defend him. But the comments that you saw on the Access Hollywood are indefensible, and he continues to do it. And the people close to the campaign that I've talked to said these stories are just going to drip, drip, drip until election day. But on the other side of the coin, we've got the WikiLeaks emails that are coming out that it seems to be, if you watch.
Again, every time we mention WikiLeaks, I know this is my issue, but I feel like we have to say, this guy's a criminal.
No, I agree with you.
And this has nothing to do with Hillary Clinton. This has everything to do with whoever's email he's stealing. He's a criminal. He's not a news source. He's a criminal.
Well, and Eric and I were talking right before we came on that the WikiLeaks and or what we're seeing about Trump and the groping allegations, the octopus allegations, whatever, just confirmed to those that support them their pre-existing beliefs. You see that WikiLeaks, yeah, Hillary's an elitist liar. You see the Trump stuff, you say, yeah, Trump's a groping ape. And it doesn't really, there's no real dialogue. It's just confirming what other people think that gets increasingly polarized.
Here's what I don't get. If I'm the Rubio or Cruz or Bush, I'm thinking, where was the opposition research in the primaries? I mean, was this a function of they just figured the guy's going to implode and nobody's going to take him seriously?
Yes.
But, I mean, talk about malpractice. I mean, we're practitioners of electoral politics, of campaigns and the structure. And there's just campaign 101 is you better do the research on your opponents and don't underestimate them. All this stuff was not that difficult to find.
The $150 million that Jeb may have spent and his cousin Billy had the tape.
Right.
That could have ended Donald Trump then.
Right.
Hey, we talked all along during the debates, and we did. I remember before Christmas that somebody needed to pin his ears back and actually take him on with maybe this information or whatever, and nobody did it. And for some reason, I don't know why. It seemed Christie was the only one that really was capable of doing it. And when Rubio tried it, he got creamed. And Governor Kasich just chose not to engage, and Jeb Bush couldn't do it either.
I'm not convinced any of them had it.
It'd be hard to do.
I think it's what Eric said right out of the gate. I think too many people said, you and I said it. He'll go away.
Oh, I said it on
the
show.
You were waiting at the Trump bar.
Well, he continues to say things that all of us think will make his candidacy and him implode.
It started with the POW
and he
comments.
Yes, with the McCain and then the reporter who had cerebral palsy and now the women comments. And you keep thinking, this is it, this is it, this is it. It's not it.
He's Glenn Close in the bathtub. You thought he's dead and he's not.
Right. The primary process needs to change.
The horror movie with 12 sequels just keeps coming at you.
Right.
But maybe the bigger question is, if a guy like that who's so flawed and says so many stupid things can win a primary, there's some real anger in the electorate.
Right. Well, and the anger is legitimate. The anger isn't to be dismissed. The anger is legitimate. There ought to be anger on the Democrat side about the primary process, whether or not Bernie Sanders, you like him or don't like him. And frankly, I think he would have been incredibly frightening had he had been the candidate. But Bernie Sanders was blocked out by a primary process that literally blocked him out. Democrats ought to be upset by that.
He came closer to winning the a 74-year-old socialist came closer to winning the nomination than Hillary did in 2008. That's how messed up their primary process was, too, if you look at it that way.
The other thing I just say, in all seriousness, and I'm going to give a shout-out to Pat Brady, because right now you see a lot of political calculus going on the Republican side, and Democrats do it, too. To be silent on Donald Trump at this point, and really at any point, is to be complicit. And there are some things that are more important in an election. And Pat Brady's taking a lot of heat, and he's not doing it for any political gain that he's had the courage to stand
out. No, because you got to look yourself in the mirror.
But let me tell you something. Pat and I were on a panel, and we were somewhere, and we got to the end of it, and a guy came up to him at the end and said a horrible thing to him. And I turned to Pat, and I said, does that happen to you a lot? And he goes, you have no idea. You have no idea. And again, there are others besides Pat, but Pat's sitting here. And I just think for any Republican to do the like, well, I'll still vote for him, but I don't endorse and all this, stand up and have a principle. And if you lose an election, there's worse things in the world. But this guy is a predator, he's a goof, and he's a danger to our country. And anyone who doesn't speak out against him, I think, is complicit.
Yeah, I appreciate the kind words, but guys like Paul Ryan and Reince Priebus and the chairman here and others are in a tough spot because you can't just ignore the base, the rank and file of the party. There has to be some loyalty to that. I said what I said because I think it's bad for the country. But this guy has put people in a very difficult position. Fortunately, I think that there's been some bifurcation between, I think people understand who Trump is, and they're not necessarily painting the other candidates with the same brush.
But yeah, just to make you more uncomfortable with more praise, because I know nothing makes you more uncomfortable with compliments, as a father of daughters, recognizing who this guy was a year ago in honor of your wife and standing up and saying what you said. It's a big deal, and you ought to take credit for it.
She gets a subpoena, and after, not before, that would be bad, but after getting a subpoena to give over your emails and lots of other things, she deleted the emails. She has to go to jail.
For days since the debate, from Kellyanne Conway on down, to every news channel that he watches, to every Twitter feed that he reads, he has been told that the President of the United States doesn't put his or her opponents in jail. And he still has it in his speeches 5 days later. He has this painful need for affirmation on every level, which is so part of however damaged he is between the years. Yeah, it's funny. I mentioned this again, and I don't mean to overhype it, but there's a PBS Frontline doc on the election called The Choice 2016, which bounces back and forth between Hillary's life history and Trump's life history. They both had really terrible fathers, and they're both damaged by their terrible fathers, and that goes forward into the psyche that you see and how they've played their lives out to this point. It's not an excuse for either one of them. It's not an excuse for her incredible dishonesty and his incredible buffoonery. But as you wake up this morning and the sun rises, know this, the old saying, we all know the old saying, hell hath no fury like a woman groped by Donald Trump. 53% of the voting population is speaking louder and louder every minute of every day. And he is turning into Bill Cosby without quaaludes faster than you can imagine, with states that were absolutely locked down for Donald Trump falling off the board. So it appears that this is over, but it's appeared it's been over for a long time. And you guys can speak to this, but I'll be honest with you. And you could look this up. There's not a single point on this show where I've ever said, I am for Hillary Clinton and I believe she's the greatest hope for America. I'll say what I've said forever. I am against Donald Trump because I believe he's the greatest threat to America. She happens to be the other candidate.
All right, so now what does she need to do between now and then?
Shut up. Not say a word. Hide. Go into witness protection.
Give him a chance.
One more debate, though, right?
One more debate. What is it, next Wednesday?
Tuesday? Yeah, Wednesday, I believe.
You know, there's a lot of great national monuments in every state in the Union. She could go on a tour of particularly the wet Pacific Northwest ones.
And sure.
Alaska.
What about a family vacation? Take Chelsea and the grandkids to Disney.
I think she'll be going out to Mount Rushmore and getting a little spray paint and putting her spot. I think that's what she'll be looking for.
She'll take
it's all
a
about
chisel.
Legacy.
She'll take a chisel, first chip. You know, if Hillary does have any residual health issues that we don't know about, that would be the play. Get elected. Be the first woman, and a year from now, step down and give it to Tim Kaine.
Hey, the 2020 campaign, given I think most people see these as one-termers either way, starts on November 9th. So we got something to look forward to for the next 4 years.
Here's the thing that I think is worthy of discussion, and there's nothing more tedious than hearing a bunch of grown men talk about it. The notion that women have, and it's not going to change by this discussion or anything else, but the notion that women have that they should be embarrassed when they're sexually assaulted. And I'm not talking about Donald Trump. I'm talking about anybody. We're all fathers of daughters here. And we've heard the same thing from the five women that spoke up yesterday. Why? Because the question comes up all the time. Why now? 35 years later. Why are you talking about it now? Every time there's a rape, well, the rape happened 6 months ago. Why didn't you talk about it immediately? And some women do. But women almost, without exception, say, I was embarrassed. I thought it might have been my fault. I didn't know if it could hurt my career. I didn't know this. I didn't know that. Why do we have women, whether they're making their own situation worse or we're making it worse, why do we have put women in a position where they don't feel they can come forward when a crime has been committed against them?
Times have changed, thank God, because it's fear. It's how you're perceived. It's how you're looked at. It's how everything you just said. And thank God times have changed. And to bring it back to the Trump situation, for him to re-exploit these women, it was unacceptable. Completely and they let it happen. I get that they paraded themselves out in front of that press conference, too. But that re-exploitation was, again, it's unacceptable.
Hey, who's Senator Durbin's ticket guru? Because he got stuck right behind
him. I know, I saw that. You know, one of the most remarkable parts, I thought, in the account by the People magazine correspondent.
Yeah.
Was her moment when she said after he assaulted her, how her self-esteem plummeted.
Yeah.
You know, and it's remarkable, and I don't blame her at all. I blame this culture and what we've put, you know, in terms of what's a priority and what's important.
Well, how about she goes back to work, and I believe People magazine went with a profile.
Yeah, right.
They ran the story.
The one-year anniversary of how happy they were.
Yeah, right. And Melania's in the house. A lot of people waking up don't know this story. As this People magazine reporter tells it, she goes to Mar-a-Lago to do a profile on the one-year anniversary of the Trump-Melania marriage. Melania goes to do an outfit change. She has to do one every hour. It's a law. And while she's out of the room, Trump decides, I'm going to give her a tour, the reporter a tour of Mar-a-Lago. They walk into a particular room. He closes the door, locks it, pushes her up against the wall, and tries to start making out with her and groping her. Now, the problem he has here consistently, and you know this as a prosecutor, he's already said on tape what is now being verified by people in actions he took years ago. In other words, you know, he does the same. He's got the same move over and over again, which shows that he did the crime. But Melania is in the house. In the house. Upstairs. I know it's a big house, but she's in the house upstairs. And with women telling the same story over and over again, it's the pattern we saw with Cosby.
Well, the sickening part of the whole what he did with the debate is try to then push it off on Bill Clinton, who was every bit as bad. But it was sickening, these exploitations.
But it's not a comparison.
No, it's not. Ultimate
two wrongs don't make a right. If you take two sexual assaulters.
Well, here's the thing, too. When he did the Excess Hollywood tape, the thing that struck me, he said, well, I'm a star. I can do whatever I want. He's a B-minus actor. What's he going to do when he's president?
Well, there's that. And there's also the fact that is it, you know, he said the shackles are now off. I think the lid is now off. If he's had that mentality, Pat, for 35 years of I'm a star, I can do whatever I want, and women now feel like it's safe to go in the water here and come out, you could have dozens and dozens. You know this guy's been doing it for 35 years.
Well, all the women that came out yesterday, they all said the same thing.
Yeah.
I wasn't going to talk about it, but then I saw his big stupid face say, no, I never did any of the behavior that was described. I couldn't take any more. I had to say something.
I would love for one of the women who was re-exploited in this whole thing for those comments that he made when this all happened, what was it, 2005, for them to listen to those comments, because look what they're signing on to.
Well, they're on the wrong
track. Describe them as ugly and just...
Yeah, the Clinton women, if that's just for the sake of having a term. He did call them ugly back in the day. An ugly group of accusers. And then he made sure that you understood he was talking physically. He goes, I don't mean just physically, but yeah, physically.
A pig.
Well, it's a piggish outlook. It's demeaning. And the whole thing, it's a warped mind.
Yeah, no, there's something very wrong with him. And
even the comments. I mean, we were talking the other day. We've all been in locker rooms and on golf courses and heard a lot of stuff. But that one, you'd look at. If your buddy said that in the golf course, you'd be like, what are you talking about?
But let me ask this. In this sort of, you know, I don't know, the context of what's going on, if there is this kind of boorish, misogynistic, you know, it should be the way it was when white guys were always in charge, having first African-American president and now potentially the first female president, isn't he the perfect foil to sort of scream at this new regime and the way the world is? I mean, in exploiting that, that's not okay. That world has to end. And that doesn't mean there isn't a place for guys like us who are white males. But it isn't like the old rules. It's not how it used to be. And there is this sort of backlash against, African-American president, women president. That's not how it used to be in the good old days. Well, that's the world today. And maybe more people's eyes will be opened that it's okay by seeing the behavior of someone as outrageous as Trump.
Well, playing it forward. You got to be careful what you wish for, because once Hillary gets the job, she has to try to do the job. And that will be a tremendous test as well. I will say this. One of the other reasons that Donald Trump can't be president at this point, he has scorched the earth in his own pathway so deeply now. Who in Congress would work with him? I mean, I've been saying this for a year. He couldn't get anything done before all this came out.
But
in Congress is going to work with him?
But she's got a great opportunity here, if she doesn't dive too far to the left, to actually grab some of these people that are moderates or independents, Republicans that are fed up with what Eric just talked about.
Yeah, I would say this. It would really be helpful if she never, ever again says the word, my number one enemies are Republicans. That probably isn't that
How about
helpful.
Basket of deplorables? I don't know what deplorables
First off, deplorables don't come in baskets. I looked all over the internet. You can't find them.
home. But do you, does anybody talk like that?
Right. You get it on Amazon, but not in a basket. 7:34, big story next. Newt Gingrich before 8 on 720 WGN.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
His campaign said today that they're going to use a, quote, scorched earth strategy for the remaining 4 weeks of this race. Now, that just shows how desperate they are. That's all they have left. Pure negativity, pessimism, and we're not going to let Donald Trump get away with it, are we? Now, having said all this, why aren't I 50 points ahead?
This is my fight song. Take back my life song. Prove I'm all right.
Here's I'm going to go where I went a couple weeks ago.
Yes, sir. Eric Adelson speaking, by the
so
way.
So she's going to win 80-20, you know, that's not going to win 80-20. The odds of her winning are probably 80-20.
So you think electoral total is somewhere around 800?
No.
I mean, there aren't that many, but you're thinking that's winning. Possible.
So what I worry about, again, is the sort of tearing at the fabric of legitimacy. And you know Trump is setting it up to say it was rigged, it was stolen. Yeah. Don't count the results, yep. And you're going to have a cohort of tens of millions of Americans who are then going to say, oh, she's not the legitimate president, just like we had with Obama.
Well, and that's you take the, we had it with Bill Clinton.
Yeah.
If you
and
take
Bush,
the third,
and Bush and Gore, too.
If you take the, well, there's that, too. Sure, right. If you take the 13 million people that voted for Trump in the primary.
13.3.
And 80% of them said, yeah, she's not the legitimate president. You're going to be right around that 10 million number. That's a big deal.
But well, that's a good news channel, though, right? That's the ultimate goal for him, isn't it? A cable show?
Oh, but you see, again, you're ascribing strategy to Donald Trump. Donald Trump doesn't have strategy. Donald Trump gets up in the morning and puts his hair on sideways and something happens.
But again, that story we talked about on the air here, Richard Nixon in 1960, when he loses the, at the time, closest election in American history.
When it was stolen.
Stolen in Texas and Illinois.
Right.
A lot of Republicans said, challenge it, challenge it, challenge it. He called President Eisenhower and he said, I'm not going to do it. I'm going to concede. It's not good for the country.
Right.
Richard Nixon.
Richard Criminal Nixon.
Yeah.
Tricky Dick.
Yeah.
So
did the right thing.
You know, and Gore did the right thing after after it was stolen from him.
Yes, he did.
Oh, whoa.
Hey, they were hanging chads.
All right.
Come
the night between Eric and I is over right now.
Come on. He won the vote.
Stolen maybe strong. Well, there is that constitutional thing that goes on.
Yeah, that Supreme Court decision that said this applies to nothing except beating Al Gore. But
right.
No, that's not true. That's not
well,
true.
Well, he won the popular vote.
Yes.
He can do the whole.
And Al Gore, I will
but
say
that's
this.
That's not how you win a presidential election. You have to win the electoral vote.
Yes, right. And I will say this. Al Gore has exhibited great dignity in the last 16 years.
Right.
In not stomping around and going, but it was mine, but it was mine.
That's
the exact
right.
opposite.
And he made a boatload of money.
Trump.
Right.
Well, dignity and money are good.
Yeah, good.
Yeah.
I think clearly he's been swallowing all that anger if you saw him in that event.
He was great the other day when
he
said, you kids may not remember my lockbox, but let me tell you something. It's important you vote. So here's the thing. While all this is going on, and Newt Gingrich will join us in a couple of minutes. While all this is going on, the USS Mason, a naval destroyer, has been fired upon twice in the last several days off the coast of Yemen and has fired back and taken out three radar sites in Yemen. In other words, our Navy is being fired on. No credit given or accusations made about who the shots were coming from. And in Syria, Russia has put in a bank of anti-aircraft missiles. Now, unless I miss something, there is no ISIS Air Force. So this is the equivalent of the Cuban Missile Crisis, maybe a little bit hyped up, but in Syria. Because the only reason you need anti-aircraft missiles from Russia in Syria is for Russia to use against NATO forces if they choose to fly over Syria and therefore get in the way of Russia's ambitions. So we have real problems. What's President Obama's role in this? It's still his gig.
It is. And, you know, I think you saw a pretty strong, vigorous response from the U.S. military, the Navy, off the coast of Yemen. But look, to me, this raises the larger question, and it's something Pat and I have talked about. This our enemies are not Democrats and Republicans, and frankly, as horrible as Donald Trump is, he's still an American. And we have real enemies out there that want to do us harm. And, you know, political debate and discussion and disagreement, it shouldn't be, I disagree with you, so I hate you and you're my enemy. You know, we're all Americans at the end of this thing. And as we've seen by those events that you described, Steve, there are real enemies of the United States that want to take away our way of life, want to destroy what we do, want to make it harder for our children. And at the base level, Americans have to come together and understand that and work with whoever's president.
The sad thing about this election, though, is the electorate has not been given the true conservative or Republican side of how to handle foreign affairs and national security. We have a guy who's not truly a Republican. I don't even think he knows where Syria is. So we're not getting that debate. This, what you just talked about to me, in addition to the growing influence or what the Soviet, or excuse me, the Russians are doing, is really scary stuff. But we're not even talking about it.
Right. Andrea put it out to me this morning. Gary Johnson was showing Trump Syria on the map. I don't know if that's a good thing.
No, but you know what? You said it, or I think you said it a couple of weeks ago. If Gary Johnson hadn't had his Aleppo moment, as he himself calls it.
Plus two more.
But can you
Trump
imagine?
Would have had the same moment.
Oh,
yeah.
Can you imagine
point?
When we came, at least you and I, Steve, came to pay attention to politics when Ronald Reagan was there? If this would have been going on with the Soviet Union trying to interfere with our elections or involving themselves so much.
I'd like to see more from the White House.
Yeah, we haven't seen anything. Yeah, I'm not saying that jumping on the president, but
they filed a complaint with the UN. They sort of ratcheted this up to the
what are they
going to
do next?
Level.
Put their foot down?
No, but that's a big. I know that seems symbolic, but that's a big thing for the official policy, of the federal government, the United States of America, to say you are meddling in our elections. That's
yeah,
what they
I'm
did.
A little more concerned about the missiles. Yeah,
I'm really scared about the Russians. Their behavior over the last couple of years, I think it's very scary. And that guy has grand visions of reinstating the Soviet Union. He didn't care about us.
Well, that's Newt, Callista, Gingrich to fix this. Do we need a 60-second break before this? All right, quick break for traffic, and then we're coming back with them. And if you guys want to hang around, say hi, we'll do that on 720 WGN. Callista Gingrich and Newt Gingrich joining me now on the phone, and hello to both of you.
Good morning. Thanks for having us.
It's great to be with you.
You know, Callista, if you don't mind if I start with you, I would like to announce my full-throated endorsement for Ellis the Elephant for the White House today, because I believe it's Ellis's time.
Absolutely. So does Ellis.
This is the sixth installment of the best-selling children's book series. What are you doing with this one?
That's right. Well, Hail to the Chief is number six in the series, and the series offers a guided tour of American history for 4 to 8-year-olds. And in Hail to the Chief, Ellis meets some of our greatest presidents and discovers how they've led our country throughout American history.
Now, does Ellis get a chance to ask them what the hell's going on this year?
Ellis observes what they've achieved. But, you know, it's really so important because a few weeks from now, our country will choose its 45th president. And it's so important for our young people to understand what the presidency means. And to do so, they need to learn about our greatest presidents. And Hail to the Chief will help them do just that.
Best place to get these, wherever books are sold, obviously, but also get two sets of the full series because you're careless, you'll lose one.
That's absolutely right.
And Mr. Speaker, Treason, a novel. This is a new one. How many books is this?
Oh, something like 30. But you should get
out of the house a couple of times.
Yeah. But, you know, Treason is based on the headlines and really ask a core question, which is, given what we know of the Soviets, who in the 1940s had up to 500 agents in place in the United States, what if there were two or three key people who, in fact, were loyal to ISIS but had jobs at the FBI or the Department of Homeland Security? What would the implications be? And Treason carries you through a very fast-moving action novel in which people really are faced with this challenge of trying to figure out what's going on and why are these people doing what they're doing. And I think it's a good, very strong reminder that you have to take security seriously, you have to take our enemies seriously, and that there are very real dangers in the world.
Each copy of Treason comes with a Homeland Security chip in case you're one of the bad guys.
Well, it also comes with a server you can put at home, but you can't connect it to anything.
Mr. Speaker, you are very, very outspoken, and I know you've been close to Mr. Trump through the last year and a half and maybe longer, but very outspoken about the time that's being wasted, about talking about the real issues. And today we're talking about Yemen. We're talking about anti-aircraft missiles in Syria from the Russians. Is it frustration? Where are you at with Trump and his inability to stay on message?
Well, I think he really doesn't have the level of discipline he should have. But, listen, I am afraid of a Clinton presidency that I think could end America as we've known it. I think a Clinton Supreme Court will be so radical, it will eliminate the Second Amendment, it will eliminate religious liberty, and we now have these new WikiLeaks that show that they are rabidly anti-Catholic and anti-Christian in their internal emails, which tells me what kind of judges they would appoint. I look at her secret speech in Brazil where she promises that her dream is to have open borders, which would mean 600 million people could access the U.S., including Colombian cocaine dealers, Mexican drug cartels, and the MS-13 gangs from El Salvador that are the most violent in the world. You know, this stuff is madness. So I have problems occasionally with Trump, and I think he's an amateur. This is the first time he's ever run for public office. He occasionally makes mistakes. But compared to Hillary Clinton, there's no question in my mind that Trump would be dramatically better for America's future.
Mr. Speaker, let's maybe deal in the fact that Hillary Clinton's likely to be the next president. What should, and you having been there and been very effective as Speaker working with a Democratic president, what should Paul Ryan be doing when Hillary Clinton when and if she takes office?
He should be assigning every single committee maximum investigative responsibilities, because it'll be the most corrupt, dishonest administration in American history. And from day one, they ought to be vigilant and assume that the things, that the secret Hillary, the things that are coming out in these WikiLeaks are much more who she is than whatever her carefully crafted speeches are. I don't see how he's going to successfully collaborate with her, because she is so radical and she is so dishonest.
Mr. Speaker, we know ISIS, Iran, North Korea are our biggest threats, among our biggest threats. Based on the theme of your book and the comments that Donald Trump has made supporting Vladimir Putin, do you think Russia is a threat to us? And what are your thoughts on Trump's comments that do support Putin?
Well, I mean, they don't particularly support Putin. They give you his honest analytical belief that Putin's a strong leader, which he is. Look, I think Russia's a challenge. I think China's a challenge. I think Iran is a nightmare. I mean, we've gone from George W. Bush saying right after 9/11 that there was an axis of evil, and which included Iran and North Korea, to this administration sending $150 billion to a country which is supporting the rebels in Yemen who are firing missiles at American destroyers. You know, I mean, this is madness. And I look at these guys. The Philippines have announced that they want to shift from American relationship to a Chinese relationship. The Chinese yesterday had a senior military guy in Australia beginning to blackmail the Australians and saying, look, the Americans are so weak, you'd better be very careful on the South China Sea. I think it's hard for us to realize that the Clinton-Obama-Kerry system has weakened America around the world as dramatically as it has.
I know we're going to run out of time here. Would you accept a cabinet position if Trump wins?
I would work with Trump to try to reform the entire federal government.
Which position?
I'd like to be, frankly, the senior planner for rethinking the entire government. Every aspect of
chief advisor.
Every aspect of the federal government needs to be overhauled.
Thank you for your time. I want to plug the book again while you guys jump to your next interview. It is Treason, a novel from Newt Gingrich. And I've lost the title. Give me one second here. Oh, the Ellis the Elephant series from Callista Gingrich. I don't have enough time to tick off everything that the speaker just said that's wrong. But the fact of the matter is, he took the statements that were made, he turned them into the Sean Hannity show, and completely made everything political that people... I mean, again, this is the mistake hardcore Republicans are making. You're continuing to talk to yourself, you're continuing to talk to the echo chamber, and anybody in the middle that hears that thinks it's nonsense. The 12 million that are going to vote for Donald Trump are already there.
Yeah,
you need the rest.
I have a lot of respect for him. I liked what he did in the 90s, but I couldn't believe that answer was, we're just going to set up a bunch of investigative committees. How does that move anything forward?
Hold on, I didn't have my counter.
He basically just said, when we elect the new president, the role of Congress, the other branch, should be to absolutely thwart, stymie, and overturn her at every turn.
How'd they work out with Mitch McConnell?
I mean, how are we ever going to move past this and get anything done if that's the mentality?
It's disappointing with Gingrich. He's too smart to be that stupid, and it sounds like a guy desperate to still be relevant and angle for a job.
And can we stop citing WikiLeaks? Because, said a thousand times, this is not a reputable journalistic source.
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio, this is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
8:14, and the morning after the Hawk season starts with a 5-2 loss, it was actually 3-2 till a couple of empty netters at the end of the game. They're going to be fine, Dave. They're going to be fine.
You're going to be just fine.
I'm not worried. I'm not worried about any of our teams.
Rough night for the Lions. You know, I never complain about officiating unless we lose.
I know.
Rough night last night.
Yes.
Now, the official, it was some dicey calls. It really was.
Yeah.
I'm not exaggerating.
I agree with you.
The Cubs, we'll know who the Cubs are playing when.
We will know probably around 10 o'clock tonight.
10 o'clock tonight.
If not sooner.
Okay, that's late for me. Can we move that up?
We can see what we can do, or we can get the game kind of settled in the first or second inning and then take all the suspense out of it. Could do that.
I was thinking about Santo yesterday and how much fun it would be to hear Santo in the middle of all of this again. But for the sake of lifetime Chicagoans, which I'm not, but you three are.
Yes.
What's it mean to you?
Oh, I can't wait. I'm so excited. I'm considering buying tickets for either the Saturday or Sunday.
You're in show
game.
Business. What do you mean buying tickets?
Well, you can't get these tickets.
Oh,
doesn't matter
true.
Who you are.
That's true.
And if I drop your name, they'll make
the
you pay double.
The C in Cochrane stands for comp. I can't get them.
No, it's an aura of excitement. I mean, in my neighborhood, in Lincoln Park, in Wrigleyville, everybody's flying the W flag. So go Cubbies.
Now, Dave, you were only 57 years old in 1984 mm-hmm. when the Cubs played
yeah,
so well.
That's right.
No, you covered sports your entire life in this town. Does it feel different?
It does feel different because I think of the way the season has gone. I think the 103 wins, there's an air of confidence that I don't think we've seen before with this team and with the fan base. And it's not to say fans aren't going to be nervous throughout this series, but I think there's sort of a quiet confidence now. Even when they lost that game the other night in San Francisco, I think that there was still a feeling like, it's going to be okay.
It's a cautious optimism.
I love how you guys pretend you weren't about to panic. Mary Vandeveld, live from the seventh floor. How much fun would it be to have your dad around for all this? Huh?
Oh, man. My dad would just love it. I know, just like Andrea's dad, they were both two huge Cubs fans. I took my dad to the game every year and my mm-hmm. mom as well. But, he's looking down on us with Ronnie and making jokes. And even, every time I go visit my mom at this living facility where she's at, and the older people there, they're just so excited.
I mean,
they're going crazy because, you know.
My dad would be.
This is it for them.
My dad would be so thrilled. He was
Well, my mom's bananas. My mom is bananas about this.
He was such a Cub. He signed me up for the Die Hard Cubs fan club uh-huh. when I was 3 years old.
Right.
By the time I was eight, I found the little card.
Did you drive yourself to the meetings?
No, but they sent you cool things. They sent you stickers and books and things like that. So, yeah, this is a long time in coming. Again, it's cautious optimism, but with this team, this time,
yeah.
you get goosebumps talking about it.
Here is the ultimate reality of this. If it's not Santo and Ernie and Billy Williams, obviously, and all the old Cubs, Sandberg now officially an old Cub, that are still around today, you got to win it for the people, not just for you guys, but you got to win it for the people. Let's make it 85. The people 85 to 110.
Exactly.
That's
who
right.
have been around. And my concern is a night like the other night when they had to score four on the Giants in the ninth, you may be killing legendary Cub fans if you continue this behavior.
I know. Like Bob Newhart, who's saying, and I can't take much
more. Yeah, and they're staying up late for it, so come on.
And they're dying happy.
Yeah. Wow, listen to you.
Well, you hope they got to the last run.
Yes.
So the thing is, it would be nice for your grandmother, your grandfather, your aunt, your uncle, whoever, your mom, your dad. If the Cubs could make this easier, but I think we all know that's not going to happen.
No, it's not.
No, it'll go the whole time. But Tommy Lasorda was in here a few weeks ago, and he said, hey, it's been 28 years since the Dodgers won. And Dave and I went, wait a minute.
Yeah, really?
We're a little up on you. We have about 108 years.
Yeah, I add 80 to that. So I believe with all my soul that Ron Santo and Ernie are guiding this, and that Santo, when he got to heaven, you know, he got settled. And then he went over and he said, where are the baseball gods? Which cloud?
They're
and he
right.
went over to their cloud and went, what is with you people? Do you know how long it's been? They went, Mr. Santo, we are really sorry. We just got to the list. Somebody in dispatch didn't get this done. We're going to fix it.
He's going, do it, do it, do it.
Yeah. I think I told you I still get butt dial calls from heaven occasionally from Santa.
Yeah. He was never real good with the cell phone.
No, but they're way more upbeat than they used to be.
Yeah, go Cubbies. Fly the W.
All right, so first game at Wrigley Saturday night, what time?
7:08, first pitch. Same on Sunday for game two.
7:08, first pitch. Is that likely with all the ceremonies and the hoopla?
No, I think that's exactly when they will throw the first
pitch. And did you hear the rumor about why it's 7:08?
No.
Because of 1908?
Or because
it's because of the network.
Yeah, it's because of the network.
I like
Mary.
It the other way.
Yeah, it's more romantic.
The numbers.
I guess.
Yes. Now we can start playing the numbers. Mm-hmm. 7 was Jody Davis's number.
And 1908 is Army time, right? Isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Yeah, so that's what it is.
Want to congratulate
1908. Get it?
Yeah. Want to congratulate our old and lifetime friend Pat Hughes and our old friend Ron Coomer. They got to be enjoying this a great deal, and we miss them.
Yeah, we do.
And on the TV side, who's covering this?
This will be, I believe, Fox, a combination Fox and Fox Sports 1. And
once you get to the NLCS and the World Series, that's when it goes to Fox exclusively. Is that how it's going to work?
I think so. Okay. I think so.
We'll get your best people on that.
And they better be pro-Cub commentators.
Yeah.
All right, we can handle this tomorrow, but in case it's the Dodgers, what's your prediction? And this is a 7-game series, remember.
Oh, my gosh. I'm going to say if it's the Dodgers, Cubs in 6.
Okay, Dave?
Yeah, that sounds good to me. I'd
Mary?
Say Cubs in 6.
5 is good to me.
Yeah, I'll go Cubs in 4 just to save a few lives.
Yeah.
If it's the Nationals?
Cubs in 7.
I'm saying Cubs in 7 as well.
Mayor?
Cubs in 6.
Again, I'd like not to kill the old people. Cubs in 4. Yeah, go Cubs.
Go Cubbies.
It's great for the city of Chicago. And we will have Hawks Predators home and away Friday and Saturday night right here. Every second of Hawks hockey here on your Hawks radio station 720 WGN. Normally at this time, Dean Richards would be on. And he right now is being interviewed by Paul Conrad. So obviously a guest canceled. And they're both trying on wigs. You know, this is part of the thing that aggravates me about our friends at Channel 9. We promote Channel 9 constantly. And you know my policy. I should be invited to everything. I rarely will show up for anything.
Do you want to try on wigs?
I don't want to try on wigs, but if you're going to do a bald segment, why wouldn't you have me on a bald segment?
Maybe they don't consider you totally bald, because you still have hair.
Yeah. A
little bit right there.
Well, Conrad's not totally bald either. Neither is Dean. They just do, you know, high and tight.
Yeah, they do. They do the close shave.
So I believe this is, you know what they are? They're bald bigots.
Oh,
they are bigoted against me as a bald guy. They're baldists. B-A-L-D-I-S-T-S. Baldist.
Like elitist, only baldist?
No, like racist. Oh. Yeah, they're baldists.
We both work over there. Would you like us to say something?
Well, I think the new general manager, Paul, who listens to the show, is a good guy.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's going to be very upset when he hears that I wasn't included in the bald segment.
It was just, you know, it was probably
a scheduling
mistake. By the way,
I don't even have to be at Channel 9 because, as you know, I'm fairly busy at this time of day. We have cameras here in the studio. They could just, you know, send me a wig over ahead of time. It's not like they don't have too many producers. And they send me a wig over ahead of time, and then I'd put the wig on while they were doing the segment.
Steve, judging by the wigs that Paul and Dean are
wearing,
they're
all ridiculous.
I don't think you'd want to be a part of that.
So anyway, Dean's not on because he's doing a funny bald guy segment with Paul Conrad. Thank God you're here.
Oh, thank you.
Give me a couple show business headlines.
Joy Behar last week called the Bill Clinton accusers tramps on The View. Again, I don't know how people are saying, how is this show still even on the air? I have no idea. She has apologized for that. She started off the show on Tuesday, said it was a joke that went awry.
Hilarious joke.
Yeah, hilarious, right? Khloe Kardashian was on Ellen yesterday, and of course Ellen asked her about her sister Kim after the robbery in Paris, and she said that she disclosed that Kim is just not doing well. She's traumatized for what happened to her and her family.
Right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Sure, makes total sense.
Absolutely, yeah. She's the first. Khloe's actually the first member of the family to directly address what happened. She said she's very badly shaken. She was physically unharmed. And did confirm that thieves did steal $10 million worth of jewelry.
And then she hugged Ellen and took Ellen's bracelets.
She said,
we got to make the family money back one way or another.
Yeah, exactly right. She took all the freebies that Ellen gave her. And for Star Wars fans, very excited. Enjoy your last look at Rogue One, A Star Wars Story, before its December 16th release. The film's trailer debuted this morning on Good Morning America. They're calling it the year's most anticipated movie. It is Rogue One, A Star Wars Story. The official trailer is out.
But this is for the Star Wars movie that's not really a Star Wars movie.
Yeah, this is not in the series.
It's not the
this
regular
is kind
cast
of like
or any
a
of that.
Prequel, if that makes any sense. No, and I don't know any of these stars. You probably, the only one that's Forrest Whitaker is the only name that I know in there. There's Diego Luna, Ben Mendelsohn, Mads Mikkelsen.
Doesn't George Lucas have enough money?
Not enough.
Okay.
No, not enough. He's got to get to that tax-exempt status.
828, Ryan Dempster will be on talking about the Cubs here in a little bit. And next hour in the program, Vanna White and Mindy Rickles. Don Rickles' daughter, Mindy, is a very funny stand-up, and she's going to be working in Vegas. And I said, we'll call on the show. Let's talk about it. It's 9:20, almost 9:20, make it 8:28, almost 8:29, and we'll come back with the big story in a moment on 720 WGN.
Ryan Dempster.
There's a 1-1 to Freeman. Oh, he caught it! Right into the palm of Dempster's glove. Ooh, that is a little smile there from Dempster.
What would Harry say right now about this win?
Well, I gotta tell you, there's a lot of champagne in here. I haven't seen this much champagne since my wedding. We had a party just like this. It was phenomenal. Go Cubs!
That was outstanding.
8:40 now, Ryan Dempster standing by. Let's talk a little Cubs. NLCS. I knew the letters are there somewhere. It's like I was up late. I was watching hockey.
It's baseball alphabet soup.
NLCS. Morning, Debs.
Morning, guys.
Let's talk about the Blackhawks, because I know that's the main reason you called.
Absolutely.
Some bad officiating last night. Bad officiating.
Yeah, it seems like, you know, sometimes it's weird when you watch games. You know, especially being on it, I remember as a player, you're like, well, that's weird. Their strike zone seems smaller than our strike zone.
Right.
Or vice versa. So I think sometimes, you know, a guy's getting a habit. And the next thing you know, a guy's chirping at the referee because he makes a bad call. And for whatever reason, he throws his arm up the next time. But, you know, we had our chance late down the stretch, and then they potted an empty netter. We could have pulled that one out. So
yeah, you know what? It's one game. Yeah. They'll go 81-1.
Everybody just wants to win the home opener. That's why.
Yeah, no, it's true. I mean, I was there. The building was jumping. But we'll go 81-1. We're going to be fine.
There you go. Perfect.
Yeah. All right, so, Demps, you have been there. You have been there. You were the Cubs with the short series, but you've been to a championship series, league championship series, and a World Series where the Cubs want to get with the Red Sox. How much does it get amped up when you move from the first round to the second round?
Yeah, it definitely does. It just, you know what, at this point, though, I don't know if you can really say that, actually, to be honest with you. Looking at that series with San Francisco and being at all those games, being out there in San Fran with all that, I mean, those games are exciting. I think once you get to the playoffs, they're all kind of the same. What happens is each round, everything just gets a little bit tighter. Everything, as far as when I say that, I don't mean the players. I mean the level of play. It's crisper. It's faster. You're getting down to the better and better teams. So things get a little bit better. You got to turn the double plays. You got to make the plays in the field. You know, that extra base you can take on the base pass might be the difference in the game. Little things like that. So because the teams get so close in talent, so close in ability, you need to find some little way to get an edge. And I think, you know, as we saw in the game the other night, that's what these guys do, man. They find a way to get it done. And it's going to be exciting whoever we end up playing. And I'm looking forward to the challenge that we have ahead of us.
And there are a number of areas I think you look at the Cubs and say, okay, they're better than Team A or Team B because of this. But the thing that has really stood out, I think, Ryan, has been their defense. I mean, all year long, I mean, there's no question they've mashed the ball all year. But they have played great defense, and we saw it again in this series.
100%. I mean, you look at the year that Kyle Hendricks had this year. Hey, listen, it's not like all of a sudden his stuff got better. I mean, he has command and his change of a little bit better. But he has those numbers because we catch the ball behind him. You know, say John Lester will say the same thing. Jake Arrieta will say it. Our guys play some defense, man. And not just, you know, the great spectacular plays, turning the routine plays. I mean, the stuff they do in the outfield, whether it's, you know, cutting a ball off and keeping a guy to a single, you know, Javi Baez, holy cow, the stuff he can do out in the baseball field. There's very few players in the big leagues that can make those kind of plays that he does. Even when a guy's out, he's tipping his cap, or a safe, he's tipping a cap because they're unbelievable plays, you know. Yeah. So it really does, and that makes a huge difference. When you can play that kind of good defense, you can make the routine plays, you know, and come up with a spectacular play. You can neutralize some good offenses by doing that.
What golf course are you on?
Sunset Ridge.
Oh, good, good. Turn slightly away from the wind. Here's Andrea.
Hey, Dad, is 4 days off a good rest or kind of an interruption in the mojo?
No, good rest. That's an emotional time right there to go through all of that. You know, the series was very emotional, so it gives you a good little recharge. It's like going on like a 4-day bender to Vegas, and you just need to come home for a couple of days and sleep. So,
wow,
you know, it really is. So these guys will get some good rest, get a good workout in, and then a nice little team workout tomorrow, and then get ready for game one.
Pick one, and don't give me the cliche. We just are happy to be there. Who do you want, the Nats or the Dodgers?
No, I'm not going to give you the cliche answer. I don't really care who we face. Like, that's an honest feeling. Like, somebody's asking me that yesterday, and they're like, oh, you know, this team. I said, dude, I don't care. We can beat anybody, and that's the truth. So,
I realize that, but who's a better matchup?
I haven't even looked. I haven't even really been paying much attention to either team.
The Dodgers play in L.A. The Washington Nationals are in Washington. Both have strong pitching. Washington's probably a better offensive club. Who do you like?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I think Washington at home against you know, Scherzer, that's going to be tough to beat him at home. So I like them winning the game tonight.
And they start to put the roster, set the roster again for the next series, Ryan, how do you keep guys involved? How do you keep them in the boat, guys who are not on the playoff roster? You know, guys who've played key roles for the team all year. How do you kind of keep them involved?
Yeah, well, you have to keep them a part of the team. You know, there's guys that are traveling with the team that don't play. Keep them out there fresh. The BP, keeping them involved. You know, a guy like Tommy Estolo was on the roster, didn't get one AB. Right. Chris Coughlin the other night, we were laughing and joking around with him. We were like, hey, great AB. All he did was get sent up there to pinch hit. Right. And then turned around and got pinch hit for by Contreras. So I think you keep it light. You don't change anything. You keep it like the regular season. Like, hey, listen, your moment might not be right now. It might not be in this round. It might not be in games 1 and 2 of the NLCS. But there will come a moment where you're going to be called upon to do your job and be prepared. And I think guys really understand that. They're professionals. They know that. And that their one moment might be a pinch hit walk. It might be a great play in the outfield, a good base run, and something that'll help you win the team. And at the end of it all, when it's all done, I can remember from 2013, there's a lot of guys who weren't David Ortiz that hit 600 in the World Series, but they helped us win a World Series game, and you'll never forget that.
Now, having said that, you're one of the most valuable guys you could have on a team because you could be in the bullpen and you could start at a moment's notice. You could start and you could go, hey, Demps, we need you in the bullpen, and you go and you do it gladly. Who's a guy on the Cubs that we need to be thankful for who maybe doesn't get a lot of pub, who's got that kind of value?
Mike Montgomery. You know, I know you got the loss the other night, but I thought he did as good a job in that game as anybody to come in out of the bullpen on the road against a team on their last dying leg to go out there and throw four innings and go into his fifth inning like that. You know, there's a guy that if a starter got knocked out early, he can save the bullpen. He can come in and match up against a tough lefty, all those kind of things. So I think, you know, a guy like that is super valuable to this team, and to have him down the bullpen like that with the ability to do both things is huge.
You play Sunset Ridge very often?
No, first time.
All right, it's a shot maker's course. I want you to focus. You don't need the big dog that often out there, but you got to hit good shots, and obviously you got to putt it. And normally you're playing with other celebrities. Who are you playing with today?
I'm playing with my good friend Mike Pozzola, so it'll be a great time today.
Why would you play with Mike? I mean, a guy like you can't be seen with just anybody.
No, this isn't just anybody. I promise you, one time you meet him, you'll never forget him the rest of your life.
Well, will he steal my wallet or something?
No, he's got an electric glow about him and a positive spirit. He's wearing a three-piece suit and knickers right now, so he's good.
An electric glow. All right, play well, Dubs. Thanks.
All right, guys. Have a great day.
See you later. That's Ryan Dempster. You guys give me a hard time about playing a lot of golf. If we ever talk to Dempster, he's not on a golf course or on the way to the golf course?
Mm-hmm. Or on the way back from a golf course.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I don't know what he's doing for money. Oh, wait. Yes, I do. He's fine.
Oh, wherever you roam, and admit that the waters around you have grown, and accept it that soon you'll be drenched to the bone. And if your breath to you is worth saving, then you better start swimming or you'll sink like a stone. For the times, they are a-changing.
You know, if you lock me in an elevator with Bob Dylan and Willie Nelson, I'd tell them both, please don't sing. And I like them both. And I know Willie a little bit. Nobody nicer than Willie. Here's the story. Deadline London, the singer-songwriter Bob Dylan, one of the world's most influential rock musicians, was awarded the Nobel Prize in Literature today for having created new poetic expressions within the great American song tradition, in the words of the Swedish Academy, who then added, totally.
Totes.
He's the first American to win the prize since the novelist Toni Morrison in 1993. The announcement in Stockholm was a surprise to many, including Mr. Dylan, that went, I'm not flying to Sweden.
Ooh.
It's in Norway, Bob. Well, I'm not going there either.
No, I don't think so.
Mr. Dylan, 75, has been mentioned often as having an outside shot at the prize. His work doesn't fit into the traditional literary category of novels, poetry, short stories, things of that like. Here's the quote. Mr. Dylan's work remains utterly lacking in conventionality, moral sleight of hand, pop pablum, or sops to his audience, says Bill Wyman, a journalist, from an op-ed in the New York Times. Mr. Dylan deserves to get the award. His lyricism is exquisite. His concerns and subjects are demonstrably timeless. And few poets of any era have their work bear more influence. And then that particular critic added, totally.
You know, do you like, I don't really like him, but I know his lyrics are widely regarded. People really, well, of course, the Nobel laureates now do too. But do you, are you a Dylan fan?
No.
Dylan fan?
No, I look, he's a great writer. He can't sing. I mean, he just can't sing.
Maybe he could just do spoken word now. Audiobooks? Nah.
And I've always thought that, you know, based on the fact that there was a lot of drugs that were taken in the 60s, that probably made his inability to sing less important.
You think?
But there's an album called Slow Train Coming from Bob Dylan a long time ago, where he got a little bit of Bob Dylan gospel going. I like that.
Yeah. You know, they say that about Jim Morrison, too, though. Although I think he was a good singer.
Jim Morrison? Yeah,
he was more
either.
Of a poet, a lyricist.
You know, I was 8 in 1969, so my reflection of 60s music is not current. It's all reflective. And by the way, the 70s, my decade, you know, you got your Elton John, you got your Billy Joel. But Elton John, for part of the 70s, was paying the rent.
Yeah.
Little Nikita and Something Down on the Corner and whatever. I mean.
See, now the 80s is when you transition to some great music.
80s were crap.
Men Without Hats, yeah, Little Safety Dance.
Dexy's Midnight Runners.
Little Flock of Seagulls.
Yeah. Yeah.
Men at Work, Go-Go's.
Early 90s were crap.
No, they were not. Come on, 80s. All those, they all have their moments.
Yeah, they do. That's just it. But you can find bad. But think about some of the stuff in the 70s. Paul Anka, You're Having My Baby.
It's Raining Men.
Was it 70s
or
was it
80s?
Ugh.
Bread.
I think it was
70s. Oh, man. If.
It was the worst.
There's a lot of music, Mary, in our decade of the 70s.
Yeah.
It was just...
Was that Afternoon
How about
Delight?
Paper Late, stuff. The Night Chicago.
But then there was the Jackson 5 and stuff like that, and that was good.
Well, and like I said, Billy Joel.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, Dave, the Billy Joel channel's back on your Sirius XM.
It is. Yeah. When did it come back?
Yeah. Any day now.
Did you say that before? Did some? Because this is like the second or third time I've heard that. Was that
just Dave and I share a luck for Billy Joel.
Oh, all right. Maybe you guys were talking about it then.
Yeah. All right, 8:57, we'll take a break, come back, get you the news at 9 in the 9 o'clock hour. Vanna White and Mindy Rickles, Don Rickles' daughter, is doing stand-up. She's very funny. And we'll talk to Mindy coming up as well. And our friends from Broadway in Chicago have an event that they'd like you to know about. Stand by for that coming up as we head into the final hour of the Thursday Steve Cochran Show. Show number 754 on Twitter at Cochran Show and Facebook.com/Steve Cochran Show on 720 WGN.
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio, this is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Nine, ten now. Steve Cochran Show continues. Andrea Dallas is a big supporter of Broadway in Chicago. We have a lot of friends there.
We do. And Margie Korshak, our wonderful firm that represents Broadway in Chicago.
I think you've seen every Broadway in Chicago show. You're in several of them.
I am, yeah. I keep that on the down low, though. I don't want people to know that I'm, you know, chorus girl number two or, you know, wench number three in Les Mis.
I don't think you're ever... Yeah, I know you auditioned. You weren't cast as wench number three. No. Broadway in Chicago, part of, and Margie Korshak in particular, mm-hmm. part of The Great Gateway. What is it?
Great Gateway for Cancer Research, fantastic organization. It's Breast Cancer Awareness Month, so we're paying tribute to a lot of organizations that raise money and awareness for cancer research, breast cancer research, and Teresa Hall Bartels is the president of Gateway for Cancer Research. They have a huge star-studded gala at Navy Pier on Saturday. Some big-name performers that you have.
This is in a grand ballroom. Yeah. Now, you're not messing around. That's a big room.
No, we're not. This is an enormous celebration for Gateway, and thanks so much for having us on to talk about it. We're billing it as an evening with David Foster and friends. And
so what's he ever done?
Oh, just 16 or 18 Grammys.
Yeah, exactly.
One of the people that's performing is Peter Cetera, who has a great Chicago connection.
Sure.
Michael Bolton. And Carly Rae Jepsen is joining us. So
really?
A little bit of everything
CeeLo
for
Green.
Everybody. I've heard rumors about CeeLo Green.
Sinbad.
Related to the show or rumors that are personal?
all of the above.
Sinbad? Is Sinbad coming in for this
too? Sinbad is coming in. It's a real variety show.
Sinbad's great.
Yeah.
It's great. And the platinum selling the tenors. You're going to need more microphones. That's a lot of people.
It is a lot of people. We're very blessed to have great supporters for Gateway. For
it's
Gateway
Woodstock
Research.
On Navy Pier. Mm-hmm.
It is. It is.
How are you getting them in all in one night?
Well, I believe that each of them will be performing a few.
It's tremendous.
It's just a great.
Who's your MC? That's the toughest job of the night.
Well, there's a couple of different people.
Okay.
One of your competitors.
That's fine. Say it.
Zoraida Samblin is.
Oh, she's not a competitor. We like Zoraida.
MC for us. Yeah. So.
Well, we like all our competitors because we're beating them. But we like Zoraida a lot.
She's lovely.
Great. Yeah, she's tremendous. Lovely. And obviously a survivor.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, so that's good news. So Gateway in particular, what's the history?
Gateway is celebrating its 25th anniversary this year. We were founded with the idea that great ideas come from all over. And we fund clinical trials. So it's the early stage when it's first in people. That's what you have to do to get through to the part of really making those treatments available for patients on a broad scale. So,
well, explain that for a second. So the clinical trials are crucial to the doctors because the results from those clinical trials are the domino that drops so you can see where to take the research?
That's possibly part of it. It's also first in patients. We're very patient-focused.
Okay.
So something might have been tried in the lab, but when you get to a point in the research, you have to try to see if it's really going to work.
I got it.
And that's where we come in. There's money available for lab research. There's money available from commerce once a drug, for example, gets there. But in the middle, there's not a lot. And that's where...
Is this where most of the breakthroughs come from, clinical trials?
I think that what we're going to see in the next 5-10 years really is in this arena because we're pointed towards precision medicine with genomics, the ability to really identify what works at the molecular level, mm-hmm. and the immunotherapy that is going on often is starting at phase 1 and 2.
Well, I suppose, too, because what I've heard is one of the hardest things about cancer is my cancer could be the same name as your cancer, but it will deal with me in a different way.
Exactly.
So that specific medicine almost has to be programmed to you, yeah. right?
What we know now is that cancer is really more than 200 different diseases.
Right.
And because we can map the genomics of the tumor and your genetics, we can be much more precise. And every person is different. So that's where, for example, we're funding Dr. Sid Mukherjee out of Columbia in New York. Uh-huh. He's testing 300 different agents on blood and bone marrow tissue taken from his patients. They culture that, and then they can determine what exists that might work on those different mutations that are found.
And here's the weird part. He puts it all on 3x5 cards. He just writes it out by hand.
Yeah. Gateway's funded more than 140 clinical trials, which is amazing because there's new research and new development every single day, every hour, actually. And Steve, what's really cool is that Gateway, 99 cents of every single dollar, pretty much everything, goes straight to the research.
It's an amazing return. Yeah.
We have right now 57 clinical trials that we're funding at the University of Chicago. We have worked there, Northwestern. We have a clinical trial there, MD Anderson, Memorial Sloan Kettering, literally any cancer center that you would pick in the United States, plus five countries outside. So it's wherever we can find really great breakthrough ideas that are patient-centric. That's what we're interested in.
Are doctors pitching you guys?
They do. They find us because they're looking for money.
Sure.
And we look for them because we want the very best cutting-edge research that's available.
Now, 99% return is unheard of. It's tremendous because it can give people confidence to know that when they spend money Saturday night on whatever beyond the ticket price, I assume there's auction items or various things.
Exactly. You can do.
Your money's going to go to the right places, and it's going to do some real good. Is there a way to quantify how much of it stays in the tremendous medical community that is Chicago? Because we have some great research that goes on here.
It depends on who applies for funding. So right now we have a trial at Northwestern.
Uh-huh.
We're always open for other doctors to apply for funding. So.
GatewayCR.org.
GatewayCR.org is our website.
And there's links to everything there.
Yeah, and money, too, for early detection programs as well, which is key, especially now because, as we have been saying, the advances are just so spectacular.
It is. And I think what we're going to see in the next, maybe it's going to take 20 years, we won't even talk about the organ of origin. We'll be talking about the mutations and the pathways because it doesn't matter where it shows up in your body. That's the advance that's happening right now. And I think with immunotherapy, the ability to turn on your immune system to work, we're going to see tremendous advances as well.
So you're optimistic.
Oh, I'm so optimistic.
Well, it's great to hear.
I think when people hear you have cancer, that's the most feared three words.
Of course it is, yeah.
We think that by harnessing the abilities of all these scientists, we can actually manage cancer if we can't cure it. About 1.5 million people will be diagnosed this year, and two-thirds of them can expect to survive because of research.
Isn't that amazing?
It is.
Yeah. Yeah.
Gives a lot of hope and
but
takes fear out of the whole thing,
too. But we're still losing 500,000 people
a year.
Many. So
yeah.
We've got a long way to go.
Well, thank you for the work that you do every day.
Thank you so much.
And
I appreciate that.
I'm not a doctor. I won't be asking you for money.
But I'm not a scientist. I'm a fundraiser.
So. Well, you do a nice job of explaining.
Yeah.
Thanks.
But we do want people to come. So what do they do?
It's this Saturday, October 15th from...
Are there any tickets left?
No, that's the problem. We don't have... We're sold out. There's no room.
All right, we're going to need more
room. Pier.
Blue Sky
is
available. How about a deck in Lakeview?
We do have this great associates board, young professionals, and they're hosting a cocktail party at the Sheraton, Chicago, tomorrow night. So Friday night starting
at
7:30.
What you did
the
there.
Pre-party.
And that's the young folks.
Make it rain, baby. Make it rain.
Come have some fun with them.
Yeah, good for you.
Very cool.
It's a nice idea,
yeah,
and it's a way to get exposed to the organization as well.
Can I tell you about a story that people are going to hear on Saturday night?
Yeah.
Because I think this...
Well, especially since it's sold out, we can't get in.
You
should tell it here.
It's, I think, the highlight of the evening, beyond the entertainers, is that we have a patient and his family that will be with us. Hunter was 2 years old when he was diagnosed with brain cancer at Seattle Children's Hospital. We're funding Dr. Sarah Leary's trial there, and she's using something called tumor paint. So the development of that is really something because the surgeons said to the lab scientists, what we really need is a better way to see the tumor inside the brain because when we're doing surgery, it can all look alike.
And you don't want to destroy good tissue.
Exactly.
Right.
You want to not only save lives but save abilities.
Sure.
So... they went looking for a substance that would bind to cancer cells, and they found it in the venom of an Israeli scorpion.
Wow.
Who would look
Holy
there, right?
Cow.
They created a compound that's given to the patient before surgery, and under a light, like black light, it glows. The cancer cells glow.
You're kidding me.
Hunter was one of the children in that trial. And had his tumor removed, and there were microscopic cancer cells in his brain that they were able to see and remove because of tumor pain.
And how old is he now?
He's not even three yet.
Wow.
But he's doing
great. So this
great.
Is very
great.
Recent.
Oh.
He's doing great. His mother said to me, we got our old hunter back. And part of what she's so grateful for is that he can run and jump and do everything that he did before.
Right? Yeah, because you save the abilities. Yeah. What I want to do is be in the meeting where you tell the parents, we're going to put an Israeli scorpion venom in an injection of sorts, and we're going to paint it tumor. Yeah, I think as a parent, you go, look, I'm going through a lot here, and we're trying to just keep it together. Don't tell me about Israeli scorpions. Yeah. Just save my kid.
I think cancer patients go through a lot.
Oh, absolutely.
Because a lot of times there are no more options. And that's what we're trying to do, is not only find cures, but also test things that are going to make it better for them, a better quality of life, better ability to deal with
it. Well, it's exactly what you said. It's a cure, but a cure with quality of life.
Right.
You know, our friend Bill Zemi's going through that. Bill Zemi, stage 4 colon cancer. He's alive and he's thriving, but the treatment did some damage in the process. And learning how to do the treatment with minimal damage is really key.
Exactly. Yeah. I know a lot of women especially suffer from chemo brain after breast cancer treatment. We have a doctor in Florida at Moffitt Cancer Center who is testing a new botanical, plant-based ingredients that they know when it crosses the brain, some of these antioxidants and anti-inflammatories have an effect on memory and learning. So they're testing that out to see if it will help deal with chemo brain.
It's amazing. Unbelievable.
Yeah, it's good stuff.
By the way, the people we're describing, too smart for this show.
Yeah.
Thank you for coming.
Thank you so much for the work you're doing.
Can people find out more in general through the website?
People can find out more and donate through the website. Gateway CR, that's CR Cancer Research, gatewaycr.org.
Nice to see you.
Thanks so
much. Keep up the good work.
Thanks, Andrea.
9:23 now. Walter Jacobson's Perspectives heard on WGN are brought to you by who? I don't have a note on this.
They are brought to you by HearingHealthCenter.com.
HearingHealthCenter.com. And thank you, Walter, for it's great seeing Walter in the hallways here.
It sure is. He was doing the limbo at the office.
You can't control him. He can only, you know, at all. He's out of control. It's 9:23. We're back with more in a moment on 720 WGN.
This is the Steve Cochran Show.
Voices. 9:25, Steve Cochran Show continues live from the Allstate Showcase Studio, and I'm here to announce my endorsement for president for Vanna White. Good morning, Vanna. I hope you win. I'm endorsing you.
Good morning.
I'm endorsing you for the White House. We need someone.
Oh, my goodness. Hey, White is my last name.
We want you in. Hey, what is Puzzle Pop? Because we only have a couple of minutes here because I know you're jumping around a bunch of people. But Wheel of Fortune Puzzle Pop is a new Vanna White digital game that you can play. What is this?
You basically play Wheel of Fortune. You pop bubbles with matching colors to solve the puzzle. I help you pop them. I have an avatar, and I throw the bubbles up in the air and pop the bubbles and solve the puzzle. It's just a fun game, and it's free on Facebook. Go to wheelpop.com. You can get it.
You can also get it on iOS and Google Play, too. do you have avatar approval? Like, how many avatars you go through before you go, yeah, that's me?
Believe it or not, they got it right the first time.
Well, not nice.
Check it out.
Yeah. Well, I see you and Pat all the time. How many years you been working with Pat now?
34.
Come on, really?
34 years. Yes, you know, Pat is from Chicago. God bless him. He loves it.
Yeah, and every time I turn on the wheel, you guys are outside of Hollywood and going somewhere else. Do you ever do the show in Hollywood anymore?
It doesn't seem like it these days. We're all over the place.
Well, it's got to be fun.
But it's fun. It's fun. I think our audience loves seeing us in different cities, especially in their city. You know, it gives them a chance to feel part of the show.
How about Chicago? You guys haven't been in Chicago in forever.
Well, you know what? I think we were not in Chicago too long ago. Time flies, doesn't it? I'm going to look up here. I think it wasn't too long ago. We were there. When were we there? Gosh, I have to look that up.
Well, that's fine. I want you guys to come back. And one of our producers asked me off the air, do you know the answer to the puzzles ahead of time so you know where to go for the lighted letters?
Yes, I do.
Oh.
I do know where to go. I look at the puzzle right before each round, so I know exactly. If it's the three bears, I know that the S is at the end. So it makes it a little easier and quicker.
What is your favorite story when you're having a party or whatever? People go, tell me your favorite story from Wheel of Fortune.
Oh, my goodness. There's so many. It is so much fun to be on that show, and all the memories of all the wins. And I remember probably one of my favorite is the guy won a brand new car, and he said, I don't have to take the bus anymore.
Oh, that's sweet. That's nice.
That was so sweet. Yeah, it was great. And we have those stories all the time.
And I've known Pat for a long time. If you come into work and occasionally you catch him slipping into your clothes and turning the letters, do you just kind of look the other way and give him a minute?
Well, yeah, you know, what can I say? We have worked together for 34 years. We've never had one argument. He's like my brother.
Yeah.
Or should I say, I don't know what you would call him, my work husband.
Yeah, there you go.
You know, people think that we're married, but we're not.
Yeah, but there's a nice affection between the two of you. You can tell that you like each other now as much as you did in the old days. That's nice.
We do. We haven't had one argument in all these years. The only thing we argue about, and I already know what your answer is hot dogs. I like ketchup on my hot dogs, and we disagree with that. Because no ketchup on a hot dog.
No, see, I grew up in New York before I came here many, many, many years ago, and I'm with you. Ketchup on a hot dog.
All right.
You and me, Vanna. You and me.
I think we're the only ones.
Yeah, it's called Puzzle Pop. Jake, what was the other question you wanted me to ask, Vanna? Jake is a wheel addict. What was the other question you wanted me to ask, Vanna, Jake? I forgot.
Hi, Vanna. I'm going to ask you real quick. Can I just ask myself? Because it's an honor and a pleasure to speak with you.
Stop hitting on Vanna. Ask your question.
When you first got hired on the show, how long did you think it was going to last? I mean, 34 years is a very long time. There's no way you could have thought that, wow, this is going to last this long.
You're absolutely right. When I first started on the show, I was sitting in the makeup chair next to Pat Sajak, and I turned to him and said, I wonder where we will be in 10 years.
Wow. Wow, in 10
and
years.
34.
Yeah, in 10 years was being pretty darned optimistic, right?
Right. And it's lasted 34 years thanks to all of our wonderful viewers out there that keep watching and enjoying our show. Thank you.
Well, I'm here to announce that Vanna and Pat are coming back to Chicago. So, go.
You know what? I looked up. We were definitely there in May doing a prize shoot. So we are going to have some Chicago weeks on Wheel of Fortune coming up.
But how did I miss that?
You have to watch for that.
How did I miss that?
We can audition.
We got to have a meeting.
Jumped in and jumped out.
All right. Well, good for you. Listen, get Puzzle Pop. Have a little more fun on your phone or on Facebook. Free on Facebook. You can also get it on iOS or Google Play. It's Wheel of Fortune Puzzle Pop. And you can see Vanna's avatar. She's happy with it, so you should be too. Wheelpop.com. Enjoy your day, Vanna. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye. It's 9:31. Did you know that Jake was a wheel? Maybe he's more of a Vanna stalker than a wheel addict.
He's more of a Vanna fan.
You know what's funny?
You're in the wrong age group to be a wheel watcher.
If you were to go around right here on Michigan Avenue and the first 20 people that came through and you asked who Gary Johnson was and who Vanna White was.
Oh, they'd all know Vanna White.
They would all know who Vanna White is.
Totally.
Yeah, without a question. That's why I've endorsed her for president.
Is it the best job in America that she's got?
She's got the best job.
We started talking about this yesterday. Pat told me this a long time ago. And I'm sure the schedule
Pat
hasn't
Boyle,
changed.
Pat Boyle, Comcast Sportsnet? Or
no,
Pat
Sajak, Wheel
Sajak.
Of Fortune.
Gotcha.
It was Sandberg's first husband. Wheel of Fortune is taped 2 days a week, or 2 days a month, I should say. Two days a month.
Wait, 2 days a month?
2 days a month. So when they tape shows, let's say they have one of the months where it's 20 shows. They'll do 10 shows a day for 2 days.
Oh, my gosh. And she's not on hold, right?
No.
Remember, she used to have to turn the letters, and at one point, she's like, yeah, they were heavy, because now they just light up. Yeah. It's just like touch.
I wonder
touch.
If she wears a Fitbit, though, and counts all the steps she takes all day.
In heels. And you know how much Pat made last year?
I'm going to say...
It is the best job in show business.
$10 million?
$12 million.
Unbelievable.
930. He's a good guy.
He's a great guy.
Yeah, and he still looks like he's 12.
What does she make?
She made about 4, I think.
It's totally good.
Yeah, it's pretty good. 9:32, back after this on 720 WGN.
This is the Steve Cochran Show.
Anyway, now that I'm married, it's great because my husband does everything. We have two boys, and he's really their primary caregiver. I like to think of myself more as sort of a funny aunt, drops by from time to time. Oh, and I don't know if you haven't already noticed, but I'm very high maintenance. For example, if my eyelashes don't have that very certain, delicate Bruce Jenner quality to them, I can barely get out of bed in the morning, which I like to call exercise.
:45 I refuse to accept compliments about Mindy Rickle's husband because I've known Ed for 25 years and, well, come on. He's mostly cleaning the reed on the old clarinet, you know what I'm saying? The lovely and talented Mindy Rickles will be in Vegas. More on that in a second. How have you been?
Good. How are you, Steve?
Nice to talk to you again. Congratulations on another step in Vegas.
I know. I'm very excited. Yeah, October 17th through the 23rd, I'm at the Laugh Factory at the Tropicana.
It's pretty cool.
And my dad, he wanted to get a plug in for himself. John Rickles will be there over the weekend. So he'll be sort of scratching at the side of the stage, trying to, I guess, at the Orleans, trying to get some time with me. But
I am
very excited.
I am so tired of Don Rickles riding your coattails. When is this going to stop?
I know. I don't know. It's enough already. You know, he's just starting out in his career, so he's, you know, he's struggling. He is. But we're hoping he's going to get a break soon.
I think that's, it's so cool. Look, Ed Mann is my pal, and Ed is a terrific musician. He runs a great business as well. But he's a terrific musician. And, you know, getting up on stage is a big deal. And even though you saw your dad do it his whole life. I mean, I haven't had a chance to even tell you this personally. Because, you know, I still do a lot of stand-up, and I'm so impressed with the fact that you took this on a few years ago, and you're killing it. I mean, I see this stuff online. You're doing great.
Yeah, no, it's been a lot of fun, and considering, you know, it's only been a couple of years that I've been doing it, you know, after now I have teenagers and all this, it's sort of a different way of looking at it, but it's been a lot of fun, and we've always, either fortunately or unfortunately, my dad and I have always been very similar. We've always had a similar sense of humor, and, you know, so it's like, was that funny? I'm funnier. You know, my dad's always, it's a contest to see, you know, and he'll ask, like, how big was your dressing room? I'm like, Dad, did you make $100,000 or $150,000? And I'm like, how about $3? You know, so it's very, he doesn't get the different levels of comedy that exist.
But he's got to be thrilled. It's got to be so cool for him at any point. But certainly at this point in Don's life, it's got to be so great. I mean, to see you doing this great at what he did his whole life, how great is that?
Yeah, no, it has been fun. And like last year at his 89th birthday, my mother was like, you're going to get up and say a few words about your father. You know, so I got up and everyone liked it. And he was like, did you make that up right then, or did you learn it ahead of time? You know, I'm like, well, Dad, you know, I just went off the cuff. That was kind of good, you know. So he's excited, and then he's, you know, it's fun. He feels uncomfortable when he sees me, you know, nervous to watch me, but he likes it. He really does.
I know how funny you are, and I know how funny you've been your whole life, but there's still, I don't mean to belabor the point, but there's still a big deal between being funny at Thanksgiving, or funny, you know, during the High Holy Days, and funny on stage. That's a big deal. That's a big leap. Is it your boys turning teen that really made you want to get out of the house completely, or what was the tipping point?
You know, I think I actually met Jamie Masada from the Laugh Factory. Right. And he started to have me up. And no, it definitely, you know, when you do it initially and also in front of all the different audiences now, I mean, I'm not, you know, 16. And sometimes if the audience is 18, one of my sons was like, you know, it's not memes, Mom, it's memes, you know, so I feel like I'm 90. But I try to, like, relate to the different audiences I have. But no, it's definitely been a learning experience. And, you know, it gets better as you go, but there's always, you know, you have your great, I mean, I don't have to tell you, your good audiences, and then the audience that's like, you know, what is that? My dad always said, because he would do shows at, like, you know, midnight and 2 a.m. and 4 a.m, they'd be like, get off, you know, and he'd be like with his mother, like getting in the car and running away like Butch Cassidy, whatever, you know, trying
right.
to, because
right.
he'd be like, get out of here, you
right.
know, so I get the concept of that, definitely.
And again, in Vegas, get the plug in again. In Vegas, when?
Yeah, October 17th to the 23rd at the Laugh Factory at the Tropicana for the week. Yeah.
And you're also a very funny follow on Twitter, at Mindy Rickles.
Yes, that's right, at Mindy Rickles.
And get the Facebook page in.
Right, Mindy Rickles, yeah, I'm on Facebook also. Ed likes handling that page. And he'll say, Mindy can't get you. She's, you know, in Nepal climbing a mountain with a Sherpa. Even though I'm, like, laying on the couch, like, do I have to get up? You know, but he likes to. He's like, I'm handling your Facebook and your 70 billion, you know, for Kim Kardashian. We're very tight. It's neck and neck.
I know.
It's very touch and go. And now that she's off the internet, you know, I've been full nudity, front back, Ed circumcision. It's a lot's been going on the internet with me right now. It's like a naked Jewish woman, not 20. It's a beautiful thing to see.
It's absolutely.
A lot of her followers. Yeah.
Absolutely beautiful thing. No wonder your social media numbers have just gone through the roof.
Through the roof.
Through the roof. Yeah. And the thing I love about Mindy on stage, too, is she'll tell you she's needy. She'll tell you it's all about her. But it's
and it is.
That's it. No, but no. It's just look. It's just a very, very great time for you to do this, and I'm proud of you.
Thank you. Thank you so much. I know we've known each other a really long time, so that means a lot. Thank you.
One of the coolest things, you know, one of our producers here, and this is, I mean, think about Mindy's life. You know, you grew up with Don's your dad, and Barbara's your mom, but Bob Newhart won't leave the house. Bob Newhart's hanging around the house all the time. And one of the coolest things, I think back to your wedding, was I was sitting with the Newhart family.
Oh,
and
really?
Yeah, and as a kid growing up, you know, as a Newhart fan as well, and I hadn't known Bob prior to that, and to find out Bob Newhart is exactly the same guy. Couldn't be nicer, stammers a lot.
Right.
Except for the fact he took my wallet. but you have, and you know, any kid that has a famous mom or dad and super famous like Don, you had those type of folks walking in and out of your house all the time. How are you even remotely normal?
I know. Well, Bob is pretty, like you said, Bob's pretty normal. So he was very much, you know, a calming influence. Whereas, you know, it's funny because they're like best friends, my dad and Bob, and now they're actually neighbors. And it's funny because my dad is very frazzled and Bob is very calming. So that's the opposite kind of thing I get. But Bob is also very interested. How'd you do with this job? You know, and he's like, oh, I had a time. You know, he compares, and that is great for me. You know, I love hearing his stories, and he's been so great with my stand-up, and it's, you know, that's been terrific, having him, you know, guide me. And my dad, you know, jumps in here and there. But having Bob guide me. Really, Bob? No, I'm kidding.
Well, but, you know, it is funny, though, when you think about it, because the type of material you do and the rhythm that you have is much closer to Bob than to your dad. But then again, your dad's a one-man deal, man. I mean, nobody's going to go out and do your dad's deal.
No, I mean, it's a whole other, and it's a whole other time that when he did that. I mean, now, you know, he does a lot of the same, but, you know, he's changed a lot of things to go more with the changing times. But no, I would never, you know, I'm not my dad. I mean, I'm a female. I don't even want to say I'm a female version of him because that's frightening. And it frightens Ed, my husband, quite a bit as well.
No, because Ed loves
it. He wakes up in the morning and sees, you know, basically my dad's face staring at him.
No, that's not true at all. Still hot, Mindy, still hot. By the way, I will say this, that I had the honor of opening for Don a couple of times. And one of the great things that Don is, because I visited him once, I think in Detroit, is Don's old school. So you go backstage and the pants are always hanging up. The pants go on last.
Oh, absolutely.
Right. Definitely. So you go backstage and he's in the robe and he's not wearing pants and he couldn't be sweeter. You know all this, Mindy, obviously.
Oh, of course. And every once in a while the robe flips open very casually. And then it goes back again, and you pretend like you saw nothing.
La, la, right, la, right. La, he calls la, that la. The Milton Berle move, I think. But I said to him at one point, and this is, I don't know, 10, 15 years ago, I said, Don, maybe I should go with the no pants movie, because not going to work for you, kid. Not going to work. It's just
that's
the
right.
best.
I mean, there can only be one sex symbol in the show. That's very true.
Didn't exactly. Linda Carter call him a sex symbol back then? Didn't they do like a 7-Up commercial back in the day?
Yes, they did, Andre. Yes, they did. They Don's did very a 7-Up commercial.
Remember that? She said he was the hottest guy that she'd worked with?
Yeah.
That's right. And she was wearing like all white spandex jumpsuit.
Yeah.
Yes. And I was like delirious just to watch them make the commercial. Oh, yeah.
So cool. He's always been Mr. Sexy in our house.
Now, this will mean more to Ed, your husband, than to you, but tell Bob that, live from Chicago, the Cubs are going to be just fine, because we saw Newhart's Twitter picture the other night where he was holding up a Cubs W flag after a rally late that he said, I'm 87, this could kill me.
Yeah, I heard about that. Ed told me about that.
Yeah, and those two guys, they're just about, how's your dad's health? I mean, I know he did Kimmel. He must be doing great.
He's doing really well. Yes, he's 90, and like I said, he'll be at the Orleans that weekend. I'm there, and he was just in New York, doing Westbury, and he's doing a lot of touring with Regis Philbin, where they do, a Q&A
right.
at different theaters, and it's been great. I mean, he shows, old films of himself and,
right.
Inaugurals, and he and Regis are really great together, so it's very fun to watch the two of them, but...
Well, please tell him I said hello, but enough about those has-beens. Mindy Rickles, live in Vegas... And on the road all over, and I certainly hope you come to Chicago sometime soon, but follow on Twitter and follow her on Facebook, and you'll have all the details you need. It's Mindy Rickles, and it's great having you on. I'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, Steve.
See you later, Mindy.
She's so cool.
And she's very funny.
So funny.
Really funny. You want to take up stand-up and be Don Rickles' daughter? Take that on.
And tell the robe story every time, too. Right. Poor thing.
She's tremendous.
She's great.